There's something approaching 400 known ballistic events in the U.S. between 2020 and 2025.
Is there one mistake or oversight you wish all utilities would stop making?
Utilities are in a constant state of reevaluation.
In terms of best practices or protocol, is deter, detect, delay, respond.
Don't be scared by the word ballistics. The perception is that it's too costly. There's a lot of valuable metal and other devices inside a substation that are prone to theft.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Power Perspectives. I'm Kinsey Grant Baker. Physical attacks on substations are rising in frequency and in sophistication. There are nearly 80,000 transmission substations in the United States, and attacks that target these critical elements of our power system could create major risk for severe outages and damage to the grid as a whole. For example, a physical attack on two substations in North Carolina a few years back resulted in approximately 45,000 outages, plus severe facilities damage. So suffice to say, utilities don't need more headlines about protecting substations. The call to action is clear. What they do need, however, is straightforward and scalable strategy to harden sites without breaking budgets or slowing projects. And that's what we're bringing you today in a great conversation brought to you by our partners at 3B Protection. Stick around to hear more about the exceptional work the team at 3B is doing to help power orgs protect their people, property, and critical assets. And now for the best part. Today, we are going to talk about implementing secure layered defense using ballistic barriers that go beyond regulatory minimums, plus get some big picture pragmatic playbooks that utilities can act on today, right now. I'm so excited to welcome our guest today, who's going to walk us through all of that. Brent Warzoka is the VP of Sales at 3B Protection. Brent, how are you today? How's it going?
I'm doing great, Kinsey. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm excited for our conversation. This is a topic that I know a lot of people in our audience are very interested in hearing more about. So if it sounds good to you, I'll dig right into the questions.
Let's do it.
Awesome. So now before we get into some of the bigger picture conversation here, I would love if you could just tell me the quick story of how you got into, you know, security systems as a career. What led you to 3B? What kind of work are you and your team doing these days? If you don't mind, give me the rundown on your career and your company.
I kind of fell into this industry by accident. It was not anything planned on my part, and it's a whole separate long story about how I did get into the industry. But I started with an organization called Security Integrations here in Albany, New York, or at least they were headquartered in Albany in 2004. And so I worked for them for about 15 years or so, more or less as an account executive, taking care of a wide variety of vertical markets, everything from utilities to healthcare to food manufacturing and so forth. We were acquired by a much larger interest, Convergent Technologies, in late 2018. So for 7 years or so, I worked for Convergent, doing a lot of what I had previously been doing. And then I had some graduated roles over time, and most recently joined Convergent's utility focused team. So one of the ways they support the marketplace and the individual offices around the country was with teams of subject matter experts. And because I was doing more and more utility business, I was asked if I would be willing to join that team. And it really had some appeal to me because it got me out of a what I would call a generalist mode, where you kind of had to know a little bit about a lot. And it really allowed me to develop some level of subject matter expertise and really focus on helping out with our utility business. So I did that for the last 3 or so years while I was with Convergent. And during that time, we developed a relationship with 3B Protection. You know, what happened? You alluded to the Moores County incident a few minutes ago. But what happened after that is we started to field more incoming requests for information about ballistic barriers and ideas. And, you know, as organizations started to realize this is not a fad, it's not a trend, these ballistic events are not going away, what can we do about it? And although Convergent is a security systems integrator, technology integrator, and we were not into barriers in any way, shape, or form, they would still come to us and ask. And so we started to look into it for them, and we didn't really have a lot of great solutions or ideas. We were vaguely aware of what was out in the marketplace, but no real experience with them. So we would say, you might want to take a look at this. We met 3B a couple years ago, and we were introduced to them by one of Convergent's large utility customers in the Southwest, and they loved them immediately. So there was a level of trust that went well above and beyond what we had with any other organization. So as we started to explore what their offerings were, we very quickly came up with an idea that is, you know, soon to be patented, where we could use the wall as a way to support the infrastructure that goes along with the systems that Convergent designs and installs. So specifically communication cabling and power cabling. So we've kind of perfected a way to use the 3B wall to support the Convergent technologies that they install. And it can do it in a much cost-effective way compared to some historical ways of getting those things installed around a perimeter. So I just got to know the folks at 3B over the course of a couple of years. I was tasked with being the point person from Convergent on the 3B relationship. And just over time, I decided to go work for them directly. And that was about 3 months ago was when I joined 3B full time.
Awesome. It's great to hear the background, Brent, and to kind of hear your story. I feel like no two utility career paths are the same. So I appreciate you sharing that. So now that we have a little bit of your background, Brent, I would like to dive in by sort of setting the scene. I don't think anybody listening to this would deny that physical security is obviously critical for our grid. But for many years, it seems that it might have maybe taken a backseat in the minds and in the investment strategies of leaders to maybe cybersecurity, for an example. Now, both physical security and cybersecurity are obviously critical, but to frame things initially, do you mind just walking me through the sort of general risk profile vulnerabilities for the average U.S. utility player? You know, what's the baseline typically when we're talking about physical security needs?
You know, it's funny. It wasn't all that long ago that the reason utilities had fences of any kind around their substations was just to prevent people from wandering in and getting hurt inadvertently. It wasn't all that long ago that it was really just a safety thing for outsiders. But, you know, these days, although, you know, our company really does focus on the ballistic portion of things during most of our presentations, you know, the reality is that there's a lot of valuable metal and other devices inside a substation that are prone to theft. And so, you know, the bulk electric's most common everyday issue that they're dealing with remains vandalism and criminal activity in the form of break-ins, theft, and disruptions to service by removing items that have value in the aftermarket. So, you know, that what Convergent would do was design electronic systems for both surveillance and intrusion detection that would give some early warning about some unauthorized activity. And what 3B has done is kind of take that that physical protection to the next level, not just for ballistics, which I'm sure we'll talk about here in the next few minutes, and that's probably the sexiest thing to talk about these days, but also for break-in. You know, we'll talk in a minute about the deterrence portion of the deter, detect, delay, respond sequence. But the physical deterrence that some of the walls and gates that 3B manufactures is profound. And so it can really... it really does give the utility a, I don't want to say bulletproof, but a much more resilient barrier than any of the competition can offer.
And to your point, it's very interesting to note that all of this is happening today. And it wasn't that long ago that those systems existed just to keep people from accidentally wandering in somewhere. Now, with that in mind, let's talk a little bit about what, you know, the threats of today look like. These attacks, as I mentioned, are getting more frequent. They're getting more sophisticated. Over the last decade, can you kind of characterize what has changed in terms of physical attacks about, you know, some things like maybe frequency, the caliber, the level of attacks, the intent, who the bad actors are? What does those kind of changes look like to you?
So, you know, the trigger event for this was there's a substation out in California known as Metcalf. This really was the trigger event for ballistics in the industry. And, you know, the date on this was April 16th, 2013. A little bit of trivia. It's the day after the Boston Marathon bombing. So to make it kind of easy to remember when this first started, that's the date. But since that time, these events continue to escalate, as you mentioned early, in both frequency and severity. There's something like approaching 400 known ballistic events in the U.S. between 2020 and 2025. Variety of caliber weapons are being used. You know, during some surveying of the customer base that we talk to these days, they are they're kind of settling on what we would call a UL level 8 is what they think is the sweet spot, what they need to protect against. So those are high powered rifles, but not quite the 50 caliber, which would be a UL level 10 that 3B can help protect against. But it's that kind of ammo and rifle that they're seeing most frequently in these ballistic events. the impetus for this or the motivation behind it, of course, has some is political in some way, in the same way that you may have some left-wing extremists that think that they're Mother Earth's last best protector when it comes to things like oil pipelines and whatnot. You've seen those demonstrations and, you know, attempts at damage from the left-wing side. The ballistic events really tend to be from right-wing extremists. They believe that there's a civil war coming and they're in the best position to win it, and they just as soon get on with it. And so if they can take out power to a substation and the surrounding community, you know, they view that as a force multiplier, that is, there's a cascade effect that they can't accomplish entirely on their own. So, you know, it's being talked frequently on message boards, dark web, all that sort of thing, that it is an all day, every day occurrence that the EISAC has established, and the FBI has figured out where these people are talking about it. And I've seen screen captures of some of the conversations, and it is it's disturbing to say the least. But unfortunately, there's a political motivation to it.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting context that I personally had not really considered was part of this conversation. Do you think that utilities are in a similar situation? You know, do you feel that they're underestimating risk? Are they appropriately estimating risk? Are there any blind spots to be aware of when we're talking about the ways that they're assessing the potential risk of these kinds of threats?
You know, I don't think so. And like I said earlier, you know, as it became clear that this was not going away, the incoming requests for information have ramped up. And in my 21 plus year career in security sales, I've never had a more receptive audience when it comes to some of the reach out language that I've employed here the last couple of years, just simply asking, is your organization starting to think about ballistic protection? We know that they are. And the response back to us has been almost uniform with interest at a minimum. You know, they're not all ready to implement this. Some of them have already done some elaborate substation enhancements since that budget money has passed, but they're all thinking about this. And a great many of them are starting to implement it, whether it's perimeter protection in the classic way that 3B would go to market, or individual asset protection, meaning the transformers themselves. They're all starting to think about what the plan is for this. And even though it's not part of the regulated environment yet, just as a matter of best practice and making sure that they can't, that no unacceptable consequences, which in the electrical utility world is power outages, making sure no unacceptable consequences occur, they realize this is just the lay of the land these days.
You mentioned the, you know, regulatory compliance aspect of this. Before we get into some of those best practices that you talked about, is there anything to note in terms of the regulatory compliance element of this? How much of this is regulated, if any? You know, what is kind of the lay of the land in terms of complying with regulatory standards in terms of security, if any at all?
At present, there's none. And in fact, if you were to read through all of the NERC SIP regulations, the word video doesn't even appear. So, you know, they leave it somewhat up to the bulk electric or the electricity provider and its auditing authority, you know, what complies with things like NERC 6 and NERC 14 regulations. But right now, there is no ballistic directive whatsoever. Of course, 3B hopes that changes in some future versions of this, but there really is no regulatory obligation. No one's going to get audited and fined for not having ballistic protection right now, but certainly common sense would tell you that that's not too far down the road.
Yeah, interesting. So it seems a lot of the onus really lies with the utilities themselves who want to implement these best practices. Now, a mindset that you have shared with us in terms of best practices or protocol is deter, detect, delay, respond. I would love if you could just walk me through what that means.
So that is the physical security layered approach, right? And whether it's a K-12 or an electric utility, all of these things apply. So, you know, the best possible outcome is deterrence, right? If, you know, when you think about what a 3B ballistic wall 12 feet high might look like in comparison to regular chain link fence, which still the vast majority of substations have around the perimeter, it in and of itself is a deterrence. If you can prevent something from even occurring, that's when you're in the best possible position. You know, detection, those, although our wall will not typically help with that, you know, systems designed by the security integrator, installed by the security integrator, that might have thermal cameras or radar around the perimeter to give some early warning of something approaching the substation that might be of interest. Then you couple that with video or some other kind of analysis device. You know, that is the detection element. The other box that 3B checks and checks in a big way is the deterrence, right? As we've talked about, you're just simply not getting through this wall. And I've got videos I could show where, teams of like six guys with pickaxes, we had to go through a test that the Department of State had requested about forced entry. But, you know, six guys in the course of an hour with pickaxes and firemen's axes and a variety of other implements could not get through the wall in an hour. They could not even make a hole the size that a human being could get through 60 minutes uninterrupted. So, you know, it's a huge, huge advantage for utilities if you can, that level of deterrence, right? If someone can't get through in an hour, that should give just about everybody at every substation, no matter how remote, if you've coupled that deterrence with the detection element, right? And you've given some warning to the SOC, the operators at the SOC, that something's going on. You've got plenty of time at that point to get some combination of law enforcement response on site, as well as the site operators to evaluate what's actually occurring. So the deterrence is a huge part. And then assess and communicate will often be inserted into the mix between the deterrence and the response portion. So, you know, again, think electronics that companies like Convergent and other integrators might install. But yeah, it's really the response part that becomes critical at the end, right? Again, all that we're trying to do is help organizations shave down the time that something, when they know that something first occurs or is occurring versus when people can respond on site. If you don't know that something has occurred until the operational system starts flashing red because something exploded inside or has been shot and is now overheating, you're in a really bad position. But if you can stop it from even occurring in the first place, and if it does occur, give as much advance warning and then slow it down along the way, that's what puts the utilities in the best possible outcomes.
Yeah, that's really helpful to get all of that context and kind of understand the cascade of what happens when an attack becomes even an idea. So I appreciate that, Brent. And I'm curious, when we're, you know, one of the big conversations that we have often on this show is about the need for improvements, modernization to existing infrastructure. So let's talk a little bit about how those best practices that deter, detect, delay, respond might shift when we're looking at existing infrastructure versus planning for security equipment and facilities that are being built today. So when we're looking at the sort of retrofits versus the new builds, does that change anything in terms of how these best practices operate?
Sure. So, you know, the utilities are in a constant state of reevaluation of criticality of any given facility, right? And generally speaking, something that might be low in a prior evaluation might be reclassified as medium and medium high. That sort of thing occurs on a near day-to-day basis, right? So, you know, what organizations will do in order to plan and justify spending is do some tabletop and gaming sort of exercises, right? They'll figure out or they'll document what is the consequence that we absolutely cannot accept. And obviously this would be some sort of power outage for some length of time, right? And then they'll just simply game out what might happen to trigger that consequence, whether it's someone getting onto the site and leaving an explosive, whether it's someone firing from outside the site, whatever the situation may be, they'll kind of run that through the gamut of when will we know what happened and how long does it take us to respond and all of the interim events as well. And if they do not have enough protection, and it might, and the levels of protection could be anything from simple signage on the fencing, right? No trespassing, to very elaborate electronic systems and walls. But they'll take what they know that substation has at present, take the unacceptable consequence of what might happen, and then figure out, you know, how long the interim events might be, and do we have enough at this facility to prevent it from happening? And so as they run through the realization that they don't, that we will not be able to even know what's going on until the worst consequences already happen, then they can start to stand up layers of protection and deterrence to a sufficient level that will get them to a good spot. If this were to occur, we would have an early warning coupled with our typical response times, both internal and external. We can prevent the worst possible case from happening. So that's typically how it goes, or how they evaluate where they need to spend money and what they should spend it on.
Yeah, super interesting to hear that. And it brings to mind, too, whether there might be a difference for urban versus rural environments, you know, when we're talking about where these substations exist. Can you walk me through that a little?
Yeah, of course. You know, many substations are remote and by design, right? No need for it to be publicized where the location is, or have people driving past every day. Now, you can't always get away with that depending on what the locality is that you're serving. But, you know, when you're the disadvantage of the remote is generally twofold, is typically the lack of communication. Many of them are still running on very old communication lines that don't have sufficient bandwidth to produce video and other alerts in as much real time as they would like. But also it elongates the response time, both from law enforcement. Now, law enforcement is not going to go into the substation, but at least that they will be there for that sort of presence, but also from an operational or security response time from within the organization. So, you know, being remote has some advantages in terms of kind of camouflaging where the substation might be, or at least not making it so publicized, but it also has some disadvantages for those reasons.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. You know, when we're talking about building all of this out, creating these defense systems that help to protect substations and subsequently the grid as a whole, I'm curious about the role of partnerships. Like, I imagine what, you know, is the focus of most of your time at 3B, how partnerships can kind of factor into the decision making versus, you know, is there a possibility to sort of build your own deter, detect, delay, respond playbook? Can you walk me through the role of those partnerships as utilities are determining what their defense strategy can and should look like?
Yeah, you know, I think it's mostly just to educate, right? You know, put yourself in the shoes of a corporate security director, how many different straight and dotted lines you have to satisfy. It becomes very difficult to be totally knowledgeable on all aspects of what's available to you and what their value proposition might be. Earlier this year, I was at a Visa training class put on by CERC. And even those guys that are out in the field doing some auditing were unaware of some of the possibilities for protection that an organization like 3B might offer. So even guys that are in the field auditing, educating, and training all day, every day are not totally up to speed in all cases. It's very difficult for the utility to do the same. There's a lot of different masters that they're serving, a lot of different systems that they're supporting. Things get very complex very quickly, and it just is very difficult for them to remain educated on a day-to-day basis. So that, you know, to me, that's our primary goal here and primary purpose, is for them to understand not just the value proposition of how the 3B offerings can work in that deter, detect, delay scenario, but also where there's a financial value proposition included with them.
And it's a good segue too to talk about what I think is probably one of the biggest elements of this conversation, which is that financial or business incentive. You know, we've talked some about the general cost benefit of why it makes sense to have security systems built into substations. You talked about sort of determining what are unacceptable consequences. But when we're looking at how a utility realistically measures whether an investment is worth it or not, can you walk me through the sort of cost benefit for the potential for a utility to dive into a project with a partner like 3B? What is the sort of measurement for success or payback on that investment?
So, of course, the word ballistic scares people from a financial perspective, right? The perception is that means we're going to pay a lot more, when that is not necessarily the case. So, you know, one of the ways that we try to educate people, at least the way the product is both shipped and received and installed on site, is in a very efficient manner. So, you know, 3B can, we will construct the columns and the panels as close to the project site as possible. We don't really care where it gets made. Any concrete plant that can accept our molds, we can work with them. We ship them the elements of the secret sauce afterwards, tell them when to insert it into the mix, and that minimizes shipping costs, right? If you think about buying thousands of linear feet of fencing or wall or whatever, obviously freight is going to be considerable. So we have a strategy to minimize that. Where some of our competitors and others, they're built in one place, and if that place happens to be Florida and your project is in Oregon, you got a problem. It goes together very simply, too. We have instances of hundreds of feet of wall going together in a single day, whereas some of the alternatives that have 100 fasteners that connect each panel to the next one, the labor is very intensive. And those are metal, by the way, and very often need to be grounded at, you know, periodically at an additional cost, where our wall doesn't. But the biggest value proposition really comes with how you compare what the 3B wall can do to support the infrastructure, the security infrastructure, versus the historical method of getting things installed. So the vast majority of electrical substations that need comprehensive perimeter security, the way that they accomplish that is they will trench or hydrovac out from the control room to the closest point of the fence line, and then they'll go in each direction around the fence line, again, underground trenching and hydrovacing, and periodically putting in concrete pads with poles and bollards and enclosures to support the electronics that will eventually go on those poles. So it's a really costly civil infrastructure exercise. Best we can tell, it costs somewhere on the average of about $75,000 per pole to get those installed before you even turn on a single camera or an intrusion device. So if you've got a smallish to medium-sized substation that might need 8 such poles, you're into that for what, like $600,000, $750,000 worth of civil infrastructure costs before you get 1 ounce of protection out of it. What our wall and joint technology solution with Convergent allows for is you would still need to come out of the control room and trench to the nearest point of the wall. But thereafter, you go up to the backside of the wall and you can go in each direction entirely above grade on the back of the wall. And then we've got some special columns with conduits in them that will allow you to run cable for the electronics up to a T-bracket or some other device on the top of the wall and eliminate all of that civil infrastructure, which has some other benefits too in reclaiming real estate, right? You know, all of the real estate between where the trenching and the fence occurs in the old way, that's gone forever. It's not usable. And it's interesting when I do these presentations for actual end users who kind of digest the information, I'll occasionally get comments back that I never would have thought of because I don't drive around a substation. But one of them was, do you realize how much money we would save? And I'm talking hundreds of thousands of dollars on an annual basis, not having poles and bollards in the yard because our vehicles bump and bang into them all day long. I never would have thought of that, but it's just something that someone told me at the end of one of these presentations. And again, just something else that adds to the value proposition.
Yeah, totally. It's always good to hear from the boots on the ground, right? They come up with ideas that we might not ever. You know, as we finish up today, Brent, I'm curious if you have any sort of, you know, final message or parting words for utility leaders who are listening to this as it pertains to physical security. What would you want to leave our audience of utility leaders with today?
You know, I would just ask folks that run through this recording to don't hesitate to reach out to us. Again, I mentioned a minute ago that the word ballistic scares people. The perception is that it's too costly. And that simply is not the case. In almost every instance where we have compared 3B pricing, especially when you include the shipping element and the installation element to some of its competitors, we are right in the ballpark. And so if we can give you something that checks a few more boxes for you for a very similar price, those boxes being the ballistic protection you're now starting to think about, as well as the deterrence and the delay elements that only a ballistic wall can provide, don't hesitate to reach out. We'd be happy to run through any pricing exercises. The other concern tends to be around walls, tends to be around airflow, where we've now protected some louver-based solutions that eliminate that concern for the most part. So feel free to reach out. Don't be scared by the word ballistics and the perception of cost. It simply doesn't meet reality.
All right. And yeah, I'll tell everybody more about 3B in a second here, and we'll have more information in the show notes. But before we get to that, Brent, it is time for our lightning round. This is a quick rapid fire section to close us out. So starting off, is there one mistake or oversight you wish all utilities would stop making?
I don't know that there's one single mistake, but what I would say to you just in sitting in many, many conversations with them where we were brought in as the integrator is, and again, this has very little to do with 3B and walls, but don't overlook the insider component of the threat matrix, right? You know, typically the threat matrix is vandal, criminal, sabotage, and insider. But I have to tell you, if there's one thing that would come up regularly as a bit of an oversight was one person within a utility needing to remind somebody else of the insider threat too. Hey, we don't really need to worry about that because the insider threat was not really part of the thought process from one person when someone else would often remind them about that. So that'd probably be my answer to that question.
So next one, what's the most surprising request you have had during one of your projects?
Nothing, no one individual thing stands out. But what I would tell you, the things that would commonly occur that would make us laugh were generally procurement driven questions like, hey, can we return this equipment that we bought 3 years ago? Because we figured out that we don't have a use for it anymore. And we'd have to go, no, you can't return 250 enclosures that were bought and paid for 3 years ago. There's no market for that.
Gonna have to check the terms and conditions on that one. All right. And finally, can you give us a hot take or an interesting perspective about the next 5 to 10 years of energy that maybe would surprise our listeners?
Well, you know, from our perspective, and our meaning the Convergent utility team that was dealing with the electronic side of things every day, as you know, in your everyday life and your business life, every day things are moving closer and closer to the cloud, where, you know, utilities are still very reluctant to do that for a variety of reasons, including the regulatory side, where my guess is that, you know, NERC and the manufacturers of video and access control systems and the organizations that use them, everyone's going to be forced to the cloud for the most part at some point. My individual perspective is that cloud-based solutions do not comply with NERC SIP 6 and above. But at some point in the next few years, they're going to have to figure that out and make it somehow usable and approved for utilities to do that.
All right. We'll have to check back in on that one. Brent, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. And before I let you go, just a quick note for our listeners on 3B. 3B Protection is in the business of helping organizations protect their people, property, and critical assets. The last 10 years or so has seen significant ballistic activity in and around electrical substations that are part of the United States critical infrastructure. 3B offers a line of products to help protect those substations from malicious attacks. 3B has tested their products to the extreme in a way that far exceeds UL minimums, and not just for ballistics. Their walls are thoroughly tested against forced entry, vehicle crashes, and blasts as well. To learn more about 3B and their critical work, head to today's episode's show notes. And Brent, thank you so much again for taking the time to join us on Power Perspectives today. I really enjoyed our conversation.